Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon, and surrounding areas. And you can also reach us not only on the local number at 503-417-7626, but we've added an 800 number for you people in the outlying areas can call into us for free, and free is a good price, 1-800-990-0750. That's 1-800-990-0750. And in studio with me this morning is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck, and how are you today?
Oh, I'm really excited today. I don't need my caffeine this morning. We're going to have Harry Dent on the air, and I am totally excited about it.
Well, that's good. I think I understand that Harry's got a new book out, and he can tell us about that a little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, Harry's got a new book out, and it's called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019. It's going to be very interesting, and I would highly recommend, as of the 17th, it is available on Amazon. You can go on there and buy the book. It's called The Demographic Cliff by Harry S. Dent Jr., and I'd highly recommend the book. I just got my copy. I got it in the mail yesterday. I'm going to be taking a plane trip here next week, and I'm going to start reading that book. And my goal on my trip is to get that book read totally. So I'm excited and I'm pumped about reading the book. Also, you can also get Harry's free newsletter called Survive and Prosper, and you can get that at www.harrydent.com, or you can also go on my website at pfgwm.com and order that too. And we got Harry Dent on the line, so we're going to get right to Harry Dent this morning. Good morning, Harry.
Well, hi, Chuck.
Good. I was just giving a little promo about your new book. I just got my copy, The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper, The Great Deflation of 2014 versus 2019. From 2014 through 2019. I'm excited about reading it. I'm going to be taking a trip this week. My goal is to get that book read this week.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's good timing because, you know, we've had this 5 years now of stimulus and what I call a totally artificial recovery. In fact, 40% of the earning of the stock price increase is just coming from companies buying back their own stock with super cheap money, you know, via the Fed, and about another 20-30% is just from their interest rate costs for borrowing dropping substantially. So this is mostly an artificial bounce, and you know, without about $2 trillion a year between fiscal deficits and QE, and think about that for a minute, $2 trillion a year in basically government stimulus to create about $350 billion a year or 2% in GDP growth, that's the worst deal in history. And so when a lot of these economists say we're in a sustainable recovery, I'm like, are you kidding? And they're saying, well, we don't have to worry about inflation. Yeah, you don't. Yeah, we're having massive stimulus just to keep inflation between 1% to 2%. Imagine without this stimulus, we would be in deflation. And, of course, history says you've got debt deleveraging and high unemployment and business and bank failures when you get deflation. So this really is a time after a third bubble in stocks. And people, you know, that's the other thing I keep hearing on CNBC and all these TV shows, these one pundit and economist and analyst after the next gets on and say, well, this is not a bubble because of X or Y or Z. And I'm like, no, this is a bubble. You know, stocks keep going to new highs in 2000 and 2007 and then now. But every time these bubbles burst, guess what? Stocks go to new lows. So we're seeing, our projection roughly in the book is that we're going to go up near 17,000 early this year and probably sooner than later in the next couple months or so, and then drop in the next 2 to 3 years to new lows down to 5,000 to 6,000. I mean, that is not something an investor wants to sit through. And I mean, and in 2008, we show how, you know, everything went down except for high-quality bonds and the U.S. dollar versus other currencies. And, of course, the U.S. dollar is supposed to crash, and we explain why that didn't happen and won't happen. But this is not a time to be watching TV and saying, oh, well, everybody says it's sustainable, it's okay. Every cycle I have, and I've developed over 30 years, says this bubble's getting ready to burst. In the next 6 years, we are going to finally kind of see this, what I call great reset, a deflation in asset prices, a deflation in deleveraging of debt, you know, a resetting of the whole healthcare and education inflation spiral, you know, on and on and on. We need this reset, and governments just aren't letting it happen, and they're just creating another bubble that's going to have to burst.
You know, Harry, one of the things that we had our conference call this last week, and one of the things that you said, and I think a lot of people out there that listen to the show and listen to you when you're on TV and stuff, and you get on there with guys like Ron and Sena that haven't got a clue of what's going on in the economy, and they question you, and they really have nothing to back it up, and you do. I think what people don't realize is, You've personally created a lot of indicators that you've put together through your own life that you've put together over time, over the last 30 years as an economist. And you said something to me that was really, really critical this week. And you said in all your years of being an economist and all the things you use to come up with what you're going to think is going to happen, you said this is one of the worst scenarios you've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, Chuck, I mean, I have been working at this 30 years, and I didn't come at it like economist. I was a Harvard MBA and a business consultant to Fortune 100 companies at Bain & Company first, and then a business consultant on the other side of the economy to New Ventures. And so I come from understanding business and consumers and baby boomers and demographics. And so I've had a series of new cycles, new simple projectable cycles, and I emphasize projectable. And over time, like in the late 80s, I developed the demographic cycles for predicting the booms and busts with generation spending and not just a simple 46-year lag. You know, it's the simplest indicator ever, but it works incredibly over time. And also an inflation indicator. Young people are expensive and cost everything. And then when they get in the workforce, they become productive. So it's young people. When workforce is growing and a lot of young people are entering, you get more inflation. And if we get in a period like now in Japan in the last two decades or now and in the future in most other developed countries, when a lot of people are retiring, that's deflationary. But, you know, and those worked like a charm in the 90s. We predicted the decline in Japan, the incredible boom in U.S. and Europe that nobody saw, especially not those two things simultaneously. But then in the early 2000s, we predicted the tech wreck, but it was worse than we thought, you know, because we still had demographic trends up, technology trends up, another cycle I discovered. And I had to go back and say, well, God, what was different from the roaring 20s, which we were looking at the roaring 2000s being like in that last decade? And I found out, oh, my gosh, commodities were going the opposite direction, the geopolitical cycle and risk. So I developed two more cycles there. And those cycles are really important because people don't understand why emerging countries are doing so poorly. I just read an article this week about, oh, BRIC is dead. You know, the BRIC, the emerging countries, China, India, Russia, and all of those, you know, in Brazil, they're underperforming now. Well, this cycle explains it. Commodities peak every 30 years like a clock. And when commodity prices go down, that's the worst thing for emerging countries. They can have good demographic trends and other things we study. But for them, commodity prices is number one because that's their main job in the world is exporting resources and commodity prices. So, you know, that cycle's pointing down now. And finally, I got a cycle just early last year. I've been using a cycle from Ned Davis for 20, 30 years called the decennial cycle. And he averaged out stock returns in the last 100 years and found that the worst stock crashes came in the first 2 to 3 years of every decade. And you can see that in the early 60s, early 70s, early 80s, early 90s, early 2000s. And then, you know, we thought that was going to repeat again 2010 to 2012, and it just didn't happen. And at first I said, well, okay, QE, I mean, the government just overrode that cycle. But then I kept digging, and I found this sunspot cycle, which Paul McCauley, one of the top fund managers in the world, used to avoid the 2000-2002 crash. And I'd heard about it before, but it was an 11-year cycle, and I just didn't see any correlation studying history at 11 years. Well, I go back after reading this article in Barron's, and I say, you know, let's look at this. And I go back and average out this cycle. Yeah, it was 11 years if you go back about 300 years. In the last century, it was 10 years, just like Ned Davis found. The difference is it's not a 10-year cycle. It's anywhere from 9 to 13. And the last cycle has been the most extended in history at 14 years. The point is, I went back and looked at history. Almost every major crash and serious recession in history has occurred in the down part of this cycle. And this cycle points down now from early 2014 to late 2019. And it is more projectable, because NASA and Stanford Observatory, there's a lot of major scientists that study this because it impacts satellites, electronic infrastructures. And the point is, you know, I always like to get a cycle. You can notice cycles in history. But you know, my demographic cycles, we also have the cause, and we can project them more accurately because they're not always exactly 30 years or something. But now I've got a whole array of cycles all pointing down at the same time for the first time since 1930 to 34. And the only cycle that I don't have a clear explanation why is this commodity cycle, but it's one of the most clock-like. So I'm telling people, if we're going to have a crash, we're going to have a deflationary reset, which history says we need at this point in time after this unbelievable debt bubble, an unbelievable financial asset bubble, then it's going to happen, and it should start early this year. And we should see the worst of it in the next few years when this 10-year cycle, or this decennial sunspot cycle, first turns down. So I'm more convinced than ever that, yeah, the Fed stretched this longer than I would have thought, but they're at the end of their rope here, and there's a lot of signs of that.
Well, you know, when we look at Japan, and you refer to Japan a lot in your writings and talking, and my gosh, you know, we're at 105% of GDP, and they're at what, 235?
Actually 250 and rising.
Yeah. I mean, so
it's crazy.
Is our government really limited to how much money they can print?
60%.
Yeah.
60%, 250%. They've been doing QE. They've been stimulating all the things we've been doing, and they keep having their stock market rebound and then crash to new lows. They've had zero inflation despite unbelievable stimulus. They're in a coma economy, zero GDP growth over the last 20-some years. Japan's in a coma economy. They've already done what we in Europe are doing, and they've proven that it does keep you out of a depression or a total meltdown, but it doesn't allow you to deleverage debt, reset the economy, and then grow from winter to spring season again. They have proven that this does not work long term. Yes, it works short term, just like taking more and more of a drug until you fall over and collapse, and that's what happens with things like that. So this is getting scary to me. We didn't learn from Japan. Nobody's looking at Japan. They had this baby boom peak, this real estate bubble peak, stock market bubble peak. Basically, you look at Japan, everything's happening in the U.S. 11 to 12 years later. I've spoken a lot in Korea the last years, and Korea's even more funny because they're one of the last major economies to peak around the world with baby boomers. They're following Japan literally almost exactly on a 22-year lag, and that's the difference in the demographic peak. So that's the point of this book, is that governments think we had a short-term financial problem. Yeah, banks got a little nuts, everything, you know, and if we can just stimulate long enough, we'll get back to normal. Well, first of all, like you said, in Japan, debt's only getting higher in most countries, not just government. Private debt's not deleveraging and going higher in some sectors. Government's going way higher. The demographics only get worse, and it only keeps hitting more and more countries. It went from Japan to North America. It hits Europe hardest next, and then it hits the rest of East Asia. There's going to be nobody left to have any positive demographic trends, and the demographic trends for everybody just get lower until this thing bottoms out. So I'm saying, the Fed thinks they can, and the central banks think they can beat the economy. I'm saying the economy is going to win this battle. The economy wants to reset. It wants to flush out all this debt and all this excesses and all this special interest and all this, you know, long-term health care education, inflation, all these things that make the next generation not even have a shot. And entitlements. We got about $70 trillion in entitlements, unfunded entitlements that just have to get washed out, have to get reset. We have a whole chapter in the book showing why we're going to have to retire more like age 75 than 62 to 65. It's an absolute factual necessity. Everybody's in denial, just like the bubbles, and nobody wants to accept it. Well, in a crisis, we will accept it, and that's why I say the only thing we have to look forward ahead is a major crisis, a meltdown where people realize government stimulus isn't the answer. It didn't work. We are bankrupt short term, and we got to go make some hard decisions and move on. And countries like Iceland and the isolated countries have done this recently, and they're doing better than everybody else. Austerity does hurt short term, but it does pay off long term.
You know, one of the things, too, that I've been really concerned about in the Northwest, We were kind of relatively separated from the real decline of real estate. It didn't hit us as hard as it did in a lot of other areas. And people around here think that we're in another real estate boom now. But when you look at housing starts, they're not going up. They're going down.
Well, you know, the worst thing is that 50% of the purchases of homes are cash. They're speculators, whether they be pension funds or hedge funds or individual speculators. They're just people buying for speculation because they think, okay, real estate's gone down and real estate always goes up, so it's going to come back. We got a whole chapter in the book that's entitled Real Estate Will Never Be the Same. And the reason is real estate lasts forever once it's built, but people don't last forever. People buy the most real estate at about age 41. But when people die, they become sellers. I mean, and of course, dead people don't buy real estate, but they become sellers. The home comes on the market or gets passed down to their kids or something, and they don't need to buy them. It basically, supply versus demand. We show a graph that shows that the dying of the baby boomers over the years and decades to come is going to get us to the point where there's more dyers than buyers, which means you don't even need any real estate, or there's a negative net demand. And the demand for real estate's only going to go down, and that indicator points down again after last year, 2013. So, yeah, people think we're in a sustainable boom, and especially now that interest rates are going to tend to head up with the Fed having to taper at some point. It's just not going to happen. This is another artificial rebound. Baby boomers are done buying real estate, and the next generation, at most, will be buying affordable starter homes. They're not going to be buying high-end real estate and trade-up homes and all that sort of stuff in the years ahead. So, yeah, we're warning people about real estate as well.
Well, Harry, this is Carl Jepson. I was just one of the questions that always intrigues me, and you probably have a better handle on it than I certainly do. You know, we always talk about the QE money, you know, the whatever it is, $85 billion a month or $75 yep. billion. What is that actually used for? Where does it go?
Well, first of all, it has mostly gone into bank reserves. Bank reserves were low. They'd overlent. They were in trouble. So the first thing they do, the Fed basically is injecting new money into the economy. If anybody else bought bonds like the Fed did, they would have to sell some other asset to buy them. Well, the Fed doesn't sell anything. They just create money out of thin air, buy bonds from the banks, especially a lot of mortgage bonds, which are troubled bonds. And then the banks now get liquidity. And the first thing they do is put it in reserves to cover all the loan losses they know they're having coming so they don't go under. So it doesn't go into lending. And then the rest of it, since loan demand's not high and banks are a lot more skittish about lending for good reason now, the rest of it goes into speculation. These banks and investment banks and all these things, they turn around and take cheap money, put it in by the Fed, and then and they speculate sometimes at 20, 30, 40 times leverage to bid up financial prices. So what we keep telling people, you know, all the gold bugs and the traditional people think QE is BS, which it is. You can't ever solve anything by creating money out of thin air. That makes no sense. It's like taking a drug to get high. It never works long term. But they're saying we're going to get inflation or hyperinflation. We're saying no. Money supply's got to grow. Money velocity's got to go up. Banks got to lend it if it's going to expand and create inflation. What's happening, the money is creating financial asset bubbles instead of consumer price inflation. And so that's the limits to this. And I think that, you know, stocks are at new highs. The reason this thing's going to burst, something's going to go wrong in the world. And there's a zillion things we cover in the book, especially the China bubble bursting. But at some point, stocks, these bubbles are going to burst again. And that's what's going to kill the rebound, because the wealthy, the affluent people, the only people still in a spending cycle to some degree, and still, and that are benefiting from all these bubbles. When these bubbles burst, and I'll tell you, in China, the top 10% own 85% of the biggest real estate bubble in history. And that bubble burst, that country is going to see 60% of its consumer spending by that 10% collapse. And in fact, millionaires and multimillionaires are already leaving China in droves. There have been a number of reports about this. We've covered this in our newsletters as well. The problem is the Fed can't do this forever, not because they have to worry about inflation, because these bubbles are going to burst, and then people are going to say, oh, guess what? This short-term BS stimulus didn't work. All it created was a bubble that burst. So why would we do that again? I think it's going to be much harder for the Fed to come back next time and say, well, we're going to do this again just twice as hard. I think they're going to lose a lot of credibility. And when this bubble bursts, the affluent are going to get hit hard. And they're about 50% of our consumer spending. And when they stop spending, there's going to be nobody left to spend. And we're going to see this downturn.
You know, one of the things also you talked about this past week in your Survive and Prosper newsletter that we always talk about on our show and tell people how they can get it off our website or also at your website, and it's a free newsletter. But one of the interesting things to me was to read about the effect of China has had on Australia. And I think people don't realize how China's economy can affect other parts of the world almost instantly and dramatically.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to Australia. I went there in late 2011, and I'm going there for 3.5 weeks to do a whole PR campaign for the book and to speak at some big public seminars there. And yeah, that's our message there. Australia's got the best demographics in the world. They're the only country that does not have a down baby boom cycle in the next decade. It's just kind of more flat. And they have growing because they have massive immigration from Asia. And these are good immigrants. These are highly – you walk down the streets of Sydney and you see what looks like well-dressed, highly educated Asians. So they're the best country in the world. But they 24% of their GDP is exports. Over 20% of that is to China, 21% actually. They have about 6% of their GDP alone exposed to China. So if China had a big crash, they'd see at least a 3% drop in the GDP growth per year just on that alone. Well, that would take them into recession right there, just one country. Well, they also export heavily to Japan and Korea, and they're going to be in big trouble as well, and then on and on. So, and commodity prices are already hitting. I mean, we're going to new highs. Australia's stock market's not going to new highs because their strongest industries are resource export industries, and falling commodity prices are hurting them already. And we're predicting commodity prices are going to fall for the next 10 years. So, yeah, our message to Australia, hey, you don't have a big demographic problem, you don't have a big debt problem, but you do have sky-high real estate, which is going to correct, and you do have this huge export exposure and resources, and especially to China. China is by far their biggest trading partner. So China bubble burst, they're in some degree of trouble.
Yeah, and I saw the part where you mentioned that 31,000 full-time jobs gains 9,000 part-time positions in Australia. And one of the concerns I have is in this country, our unemployment numbers are dismal at best.
Yeah.
Explain to our listeners, because I try to explain it all the time, about how our unemployment numbers are almost a Ouija board effect. Because we don't really have a good system of figuring unemployment in this country.
And, you know, nobody wants one. I mean, government wants things to look good because government's main thing is don't let people panic. The truth is, our unemployment rate from the people who are actively looking for jobs has been getting better. What's not being shown is the workforce has shrunk, I don't know, 4% or 5%. People have just left the workforce and given up looking for jobs with the highest long-term employment in history. If you just adjust for those people, if you just counted the people that have given up and say, oh, they're still unemployed, which they are, Well, our unemployment rate has been between 11 to 12% in the last few years and has not gone down, as the other statistics show. Oh, it got up to 10% and then went down to 7 or 6.8 recently. So, yeah, I mean, all these numbers, if you don't look at them and understand them, you know, and China's the worst on this. China hides everything. Over there, the best research we get are from independent firms that go out and survey condos or city homes. They're hooked up to electricity, not using them. They come up and say, guess what? We got a 25% vacancy rate. The government would never report that. Otherwise, would people say, oh, my God, this real estate bubble's not sustainable. The government's been encouraging it, and wealthy Chinese just keep investing in it. And if somebody said, well, guess what? 25% of these condos are vacant, people would say, oops. So nobody wants you to know the truth. They don't want people to panic or lose confidence. So, yeah, you can't believe most statistics these days.
Carl, do you...
I would agree with that totally. I'm just trying to get my head around all that.
Well, I think one of the things, Harry, I mean, we've told people that to pick up your book, The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019, and then get that on Amazon. It came out on the 17th. And so people can order that right off of Amazon and get that book, and it's a great book. I mean, I got to tell you, I got through your spending waves, and I have been totally I go to this book all the time on your spending waves, and that's available too off of Amazon, and I highly recommend people buying that as well. But boy, I am really pumped about reading The Demographic Cliff. I can't wait to get into this. And like I said, I just got my book yesterday. And we in future shows are going to have Harry and Rodney on our show and every month, the third Saturday. And we're going to start offering this book to people who call in and ask us questions on the air. We're going to give them one of your free books. I bought a couple of cases of them, and I'm going to offer them on the air and to get people to read your book. Because I think right now, this is a time right now when most Americans need to get some education on economics, Harry Dent style, demographic style.
And, you know, thanks for that, Chuck. I mean, all we do is give people the facts. And the same thing, this free newsletter, I mean, it's great content. It's not as much about forecasting, but great content, how we think long-term, current events and stuff. And all you got to do is go to harrydent.com and put in your email, and you're on this. So between that and the book, I think you're right. People need to get reality, because I tell you, even Warren Buffett is not in reality. He's saying, oh, everything's okay and the government's doing the right thing. This is just not the truth. If you look at the facts, they're crystal clear.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, Survive and Prosper. We have it on our on my website as well. People can go there and click onto it and go right to your site and can get your sign up for your newsletter. I know my co-hosts, they get the newsletter too, and every client that comes in, I tell them they need to get signed up on that newsletter. And I have a couple people who do some trading for themselves, and you have some other excellent resources on that newsletter that I have sent people to with the Sovereign Society and stuff that have had great information. And I know you're an integral part of that as well. And it's just, for a free newsletter, you can't beat it.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. Well, and listen, Harry, we really appreciate you taking your Saturday morning with us. And we'll talk to Rodney in a month, and have a great weekend. And hope your weather is beautiful in Tampa. I'm sure it's very nice.
Well, it's a lot nicer than everywhere else where people are freezing to death. But it's colder here than normal, and I've even got a little bit of cold over it. But, yeah, we're spoiled here.
Yeah, we got it. For Portland, Oregon, we got a beautiful sunny day. When I drove across the 205 from Vancouver this morning, it was very nice and crystal clear, and it looked absolutely gorgeous. So we're cold, but we have a lot of fog, too. We have a clear sky in some areas. And listen, we appreciate your time, and we'll talk to Rodney next month.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Harry.
Thanks,
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified, and you just talked to Harry Dent there. And again, I want to say that if you can go on Amazon.com and get his book, The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014-2019. And for the next half hour, I'm going to offer a book to somebody that calls in. If you call in and ask us a question, my engineer will get your name and phone number, and we will do a little drawing at the end for the callers, and we'll give away a book to somebody. So we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, good morning again. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm. It's always hard to follow Harry Dent. He's got a lot to say, and his books are very interesting and certainly provocative, if nothing else.
The great thing is he gets you pumped up, though, for the next segment, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Although, you know, as lawyers, you know, we often don't work in exciting stuff, you know. So, but I do, I'm going to have a really short Carl's comment, and then we can kind of discuss what it means if you want, or we can just go on with market analysis or whatever you want to do. And if Kevin is awake now, we'll ask him to call in someday. No.
I think he's busy doing taxes.
I think he is. I think it's about that time, tax season. But
they're burning the midnight oil.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, so here's Carl's comments today. How about this? Bad eggs, still a minority. That's the name of my Carl's comment. So anyway, and here's the point is that it's you know, and bad eggs is a term that I'm using sort of loosely. But it's really easy to become, I think, jaded and distrustful of the bad eggs, if you will, when you practice law and in your business too, to some extent. And that's because a lot of times the trouble is what we see, not necessarily the good stuff. We don't always see the best of people. A lot of times we see it when they're in trouble or when someone is doing something, you know, they're not supposed to do. And so all of you bad eggs, you know really who you are out there, but... So basically, my comment is merely this, and that is I just want to extend a big, huge thank you to all of the honest, trustworthy, caring, kind, hardworking, faithful, dependable, and self-sacrificing people. You know, children, family members, caregivers, friends, neighbors, medical providers, and professionals occasionally. Hopefully, those of us in the law field, I know that there are a lot of lawyers who try very, very hard to do the very best they can for their clients. And I'm sure that your industry is the same. But oftentimes we hear the bad ones. So, you know, lawyer jokes aside. And they do this just simply because it's the right thing to do. And whereas there are a lot of people today, and again, you bad eggs, you know who you are, who take advantage of your elders, you take advantage of your children, you abuse their trust, you manipulate them for your own personal gain, even though it's not your money. And so the you bad eggs out there, we're watching. We want to do everything we can to protect our clients from you.
Well,
that's it.
That's exactly correct. And you know, I think that's true in about every industry, and I don't think you can have it. And you know, in my industry, so much of what we do, and in some ways, Carl, in your industry too, some of the things, even though you have laws that are hard and fast, but even some of the laws can be interpreted two different ways by two different intelligent people who mean well.
Absolutely. And a lot of times what we end up with, and that's one of the reasons I said that, you know, bad eggs still the minority. And that's because we see the bad eggs. But what often happens is you have so many people, so many family members, so many, you know, caregivers and things like that who work really hard, and they really are self-sacrificing. And do we hear about them? No, we don't hear about the really, really good ones. But I know in my practice, I have a lot of those people too. And, you know, like, for example, the vast majority of the people who have either probates or trust administrations, there's not fussing and fighting and fuming and all of that stuff. It's that small little percentage of the ones that do have the fuss and fighting and fuming, and they are the ones that cost a whole lot of money for the estate or their loved one, and usually it has to do with their own, you know, either negligence or malfeasance in the. And, you know, it's a sad thing. And it's fortunately, they are in the minority, you know, like I said. So that's why I want to say thanks to all of those people who do it right, because they're out there and they don't get much credit for it.
Well, you know, we every once in a while, more often than I like to think about, we have to settle an estate for our clients. And the other day I had some clients come in, and they weren't clients of mine. They were kids of a person who had been a client of mine for about 30 years. And I had tried to get together with his kids, and I tried to get together with them before, but sometimes you just can't do it, and they got busy lives, and you know, and he doesn't want to get his kids to come in and sit down and talk about his finances, because they knew he was okay financially, and he did okay, and everything turned out okay, but it was very nice to sit down with them and about 35, 40 minutes get all their accounts changed over. He had a trust set up. Didn't have to go through probate. Everything was just handled real well. We turned over the accounts to the kids. They decided to keep some of the accounts, and we just changed them into their names. And they're going to continue on with their investment accounts with us. And, you know, and they didn't realize what their dad had. And, you know, we kind of talked about that, about, you know, how he'd done investing and stuff. And we kind of went through that. And they had no idea. But the nice thing about it was I was meeting with three kids who were just outstanding good people who could care less about the money aspect. They just wanted to make sure everything got taken care of the way Dad wanted it.
Absolutely.
And that's the majority of the people. We got a caller on the line. RB has a question. RB, are you there? RB?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to know about taxes. Now that all these credit card companies are giving you money back or giving you, like, I have one credit card that if I have a choice of taking $250 cash or I get $500 worth of an airline ticket. And do we have to claim this on our taxes? Is this like interest or is this a discount that they're giving us back on something we have purchased? How do we do this on our taxes?
Well, you know, unfortunately today, our tax man, the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, is out doing taxes. So that is a great question, and I'm going to take that, and I will answer it. Or Carl will answer next week, because I won't be here next week. But we'll answer that on the air for you from Kevin, but we'll get it straight from a CPA on how you have to treat the taxes, whether you take the credit card in cash or you take it in an airline ticket. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because I am taking a trip, and on my trip, on three legs of it, we're not paying anything. We're getting it all with mileage. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I will ask the tax man, because I am not a tax man.
We could take a guess on that a little bit. I have a tendency to believe that it kind of feels a little bit like income to me.
I think it's going to be taxable income.
And so that I'm with you. I think we need to check that with Kevin. But I think that I suspect that, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, you know, gambling winnings.
Carl, I've been using my travel cards, because I run my business expenses and then pay them off every month, and I get the mileage and stuff. And I've been traveling on those, and I've never gotten a 1099 from one of the credit card companies that was a taxable event.
Well, maybe it's not. That's why we need
Have
Kevin.
You ever, RB, have you ever got one from a card company or anything? Have they ever sent you a 1099 to say it was a taxable event? Oh, we lost our caller. Okay. Well, I've just never gotten one, so I think that's an interesting question. I'm going to email Kevin, and we'll have the answer for you next Saturday.
Yeah, actually, I haven't ever seen one either. I haven't ever seen like a, you know, something that says, or a line on a tax return that says, you know, when the CPA sends you the, you know, the organizer thing, and it says, you know, have you gotten any of this over the last year? And I've never seen that on there either. So, and
yeah,
it's a fairly common thing. I mean, a lot of people do that. So.
But it may be a new thing that's coming about. And so, because I know a lot of the cards are going in and changing their travel plans,
mm-hmm.
and they're readjusting it. So maybe that's why, or I don't know if it's because of competitiveness or whatever. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back. And we're going to talk about some economics like we did at the start of the show. So we'll be right back on Investing Simplified. I think we will, but I think our engineer is taking a quick break there. So we'll just continue talking about it. If you got a question, you can call us at 503-417-7626. And we'll be our toll-free 1-800-990-0750. And RB, I hope I got your number. I've got a book for you. At least we get you in the drawing. If we get some more callers, we'll have a winner. So you're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back right after this break.
This is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had a $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified in the Knowledge Trust, where we're two-thirds of the Knowledge Trust today. We have Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm and Chuck Price with the Price Financial Group Wealth Management Investment Firm. And we're without Kevin the Tax Man because he's the tax man cometh. He's helping people get ready to write those big checks.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Well, it is an interesting topic, and I know that during this time from now through, you know, April 16th, the most people in the tax business are, you know, having some midnight hours and drinking lots of coffee, and it's a, you know, it's a kind of a challenge thing. I'm wondering. I guess they get used to it, but you know, every year they do this. You know, 3 month. You know, it's like living in Alaska. You know, sometimes it's light or dark all for a lot of months. This is kind of the same sort of thing for them.
Well, you know, and my business certainly, from a standpoint of service and help to our clients, this is a really, really busy time for my staff, not so much for me, but I got to give kudos to my staff because we have to give tax reporting on a timely basis to our clients. And a lot of times, the investment companies send those things out late because of reporting. And so some people have to file their tax a little bit later. But if you have investments, that's the real world. That's what happens. And so we try to make it as good as we can. We send out a letter letting people know there's going to be a time period where you might not get this stuff. But we have it available. And we also, I'm very fortunate, I'm very blessed with a good staff that has worked with a lot of CPAs locally and tax people locally, and we have things down to a pretty good system after, you know, 20-some-odd years of doing it, to get that out to people and get it in a timely basis. And that's the hard thing, because everybody's got to file their tax return.
Absolutely. And it's a challenge, especially if like you said, if there are investments involved or rental properties or a whole lot of things. There are a whole lot of things that go into preparing those tax returns. And a lot of times it's very helpful. I know that there's a lot of like software, and I think that that stuff is really neat and good. But the problem is that a lot of times it'll ask you questions about certain things, and you have to know how to answer those questions sometimes. And sometimes I think I know years ago I looked at I did my own tax returns for a long, long time, and then finally it got more and more complicated as my practice grew and things like that. I've decided since that time that it's always better to just, you know, have the CPA do it, because it just doesn't make sense for me to do it.
Yeah, there are certain things in life that I've kind of discovered through the years of being in the financial planning business for 40 years. One of the things I discovered a long, long time ago was not to do my own taxes, because I screwed them up. And I wanted to have a real professional. And I believe very, very strongly in paying a professional to do what they do. It's just like if I had to go into surgery, I would want to find the best surgeon I could and in hopes of surviving whatever surgery I was going through. I want to get the best. And it's like I feel with an attorney. I think people who try to do their own estate planning or do their own wills, and I from time to time I have people come up to me and they have a one they printed out of a book or something, and they got it a J.K. Gill's or someplace, and they got a thing offline about an estate plan or something. And I tell them, you know what, if this is important to you, you really might want to spend the money with a professional and make sure that this is pursuant to the laws of the state and also pursuant to what you really want to achieve, because not always does a blank form, when you fill in the blanks, not always do you take into consideration some things that might be pertinent to your situation. And I think we're all a lot alike, but in that likeness, too, we all have different likes and dislikes and different things that we have to take care of in our estate planning. And that's got to be done with a professional.
Well, and the interesting thing there is that, and like I said, I'm not, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of these forms, and they come in, and some of the forms are better than others, and they're, you know, there a lot of times that they're probably fine. However, the problem that you have is that it's the underlying information and knowledge that the professional has about what those forms mean, and a lot of things that are there that are just simply unanswered questions. You know, there are a lot of or unanticipated consequences for the language that exists in the form. And so that can be really problematic for people, because it, the law in a lot of instances relies on you know, sort of not only just definitions, and also and just because it looks like it says what it says, that may actually mean something slightly different. Now, you know, here's a classic example. It's not uncommon to find in real estate contracts language that basically says that if the buyer goes into default, that they can immediately take possession of the property and declare the entire balance payable and basically throw people out. That's kind of the language that it looks like. However, that's not true. You just can't do that. You have to go to court to do it, or you have to do what's called a non-judicial forfeiture. But either way, you know, and it doesn't say that in the contract. It looks like you could walk over there and just grab the guy by the scruff of the neck and throw him out onto the carpet there, you know, out onto the driveway, and, you know, give him his toothbrush and tell him to go on.
Good luck.
It just doesn't work that way.
And while
the examples may be a little less dramatic than that in estate planning, there are certain language that's used that may mean something that's totally different than what you had in mind. So, it's just a good idea to have those things, if nothing else, to have them reviewed. I must confess, though, if somebody comes into me with a big, I get a lot of people who will bring in something from somebody else that's, you know, a big, long trust kind of thing. Well, you know, and they'll say, well, is it okay? Well, you know, I have to go through it and read it carefully to tell them that, and it may very well be. But then if they want me to do a bunch of revisions, it's a lot of times a lot harder for me to revise the thing, and maybe might take me less time than to just do it over. And I'll tell them if that's the case, because, and it's not because it might be bad, it's just that Sometimes it's really hard to tinker with stuff or to fix something that somebody else did just because, you know, it doesn't quite, you know, square with the way that you do it. So, and there are lots of variations on that sort of thing. They're not necessarily cookie cutter kinds of things, although, you know, certainly lawyers like other professionals use certain tools and certain language, you know, regularly. So anyway, being what it is, January, it's a good time for those resolutions. We all know now that we're going to lose weight and we're going to exercise more. And we're going to try to
From your lips to God's ears.
And we all know that you know we're going to do all of those things. However, one thing that I do encourage is that it's a good if you have not done your estate planning, and it may be really simple. It might be just simple meaning that you need a will that tells how you want to dispose of your property. The other thing that kind of is along those lines, the other thing is you should review your beneficiary designations on all of those things like IRAs and joint bank accounts and stock accounts and annuities or anything that life insurance, anything that has a beneficiary designation. You should review those and make sure that the financial institution has the same notion of what your beneficiary designations are that you do, because quite frankly, sometimes they lose them and they don't have them at all. And that can be a real mess for you.
Well, you know, Carl, one of the things I consistently talk to people about when they come in and meet with us, and I had some people come in off the off a radio show, and we did a review with them, and they have become clients. And I was also following up, kind of going through some of their other investments, this one particular person had a old 401k they had left at the company. And so we called on it, and of course they wouldn't talk to me by myself. I had to have the person with me in the room, and we were checking out the. For one thing, she still had her maiden name on the because it was over 20 years old. Still had her maiden name on it, and not her married name. And so we needed to get that changed. But then I also asked him about the beneficiary, and she didn't have a designated beneficiary at the time. And so I said to her, you know, this would just go into your estate. So we need to get this changed. So while we were on the phone, I also asked the person, and they would not take a verbal because they can't, but we asked. So we had it recorded anyhow, and because they record all those calls. And then I asked the guy to please send her immediately the forms to change name, change ownership, and to change and add a beneficiary. And I explained to her that, you know, I see this on a daily basis with new people that come in. When we review their beneficiaries, they don't have a beneficiary or they haven't changed it in years and years and years, particularly if they've been at a company or they left a company and they just left that old 401k there. There's no beneficiary on it.
Or as you mentioned, you know, the remarriage situation. Somebody maybe they were divorced a long time ago and the last time they changed it was when they were single, or worse yet, if they got a divorce and they failed to change the beneficiary designations respecting their now divorced spouse, that can be a disaster waiting to happen. And so it's very important, I'd say, as far as estate planning is concerned, even if you don't do anything else, you know, at least periodically, you know, review your assets and say, oh, which one of those have beneficiary designations and which don't? Because the will does not control the beneficiary designation. A lot of people say, well, if I just do a will, all of those funds in the 401k will go to whoever I asked for in the will, but they don't. Those things go by what we call operation of law because they're a contractual obligation between you and the company that has, you know, that maintains the 401k or the insurance company or the bank or whoever it is. They're going to, if you've got a beneficiary named, you know, John, and you name Bill as your beneficiary in your will, John's going to get the 401k.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it works.
Well, listen, if you want to call and you want to get your name in the hat here, I'm going to give away a free copy of the Demographic Cliff. We have just about 5 minutes. 1-800-990-0750. That's 1-800-990-0750. Or you can call locally 503-417-7626. We're going to have a drawing at the end of the show, and the caller who gave us her name and phone number, I'm going to give away a free copy of the Demographic Cliff, Harry Dent's brand new book that just hit Amazon on the 17th, called How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019. And it's hard to say that. It's hard to say deflation, because nobody out there is talking about deflation. Everybody's talking about hyperinflation.
Yeah, neither are good.
Well, neither are good. Neither are good. Although, you know, I got to say, if you in either way, I believe in both scenarios, cash can be king.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And when you think about it, what does deflation really mean? It means that all of the assets get devalued. They become less.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, if you've got a portfolio, chances are it's going to be dropping down in value a significant amount. If you have real estate, it's going to drop down in value.
But, you know, if you really look at this, the starting 13 years that we've had of the new century, we've had almost a situation where we've had jobs decreasing, wages decreasing. We've had property values decreasing. Property values in a lot of cases are still not back to where they were in 05 and 06. Wages are still lower because so many part-time jobs have been created. And I think people need to really look at this, because there's going to be some opportunity coming up, but you got to know what the opportunity is, and you got to read, and you got to do some studying, and you got to get some knowledge about what's going on in the economy. And that isn't and I got to tell you, getting knowledge is not looking at TV and listening to CNBC or CNN or the Fox Business News Network. All those business networks, all they're going to tell you is what the mouthpieces who are on there that are talking about and pushing their particular agenda. And you've got to do some research on your own and get some facts on your own, because if you don't, you're going to be left high and dry. And, you know, that's our cue, Carl. How does somebody get a hold of you?
Well, they can call me at 503-255-8795, or I'm on the web at warrenallen.com.
And you can reach me at 503-253-3000 or 1-800-770-PRICE. And that's, you can reach us at www.pfgwm.com, or you can reach us at on the web. You can also go to my new website called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com, and you can get a preview there of our upcoming book that will be coming out shortly. Thank you very much. And like I said, next week we'll be back on Investing Simplified. Thank you very much, and have a great week.